Ahoy.
Hello.
And welcome to Policy Voices by Friends of Europe, an independent think tank with a difference. Each week from Brussels, we bring you powerful conversations with policy voices from around the world. Policy voices talking policy choices.
When I left President Zelensky, we had 3 hours together, 1 hour just tête-à-tête. I told him, that you're going to win this war, aren't you? And he looked at me, I said, Alex, we don't have a choice. But my message to all of you here today is that we have a choice. We have a choice either to help and support Ukraine or then to fall into the oblivion of history and allow Putin to continue his imperial crusade.
Hello and welcome to Policy Voices, Friends of Europe's weekly podcast on European and global affairs. I'm your host, Katerina Villanova. The man you just listened at the beginning of today's episode is Alexander Stubb, the President of Finland. He was speaking for an audience at Friends of Europe during his recent trip to Brussels, where he met with Ursula von der Leyen, Jens Stoltenberg, among others. Before that, he had been in Ukraine, where he encountered President Zelensky. Today in our show, we wanted to do something different. Instead of our usual interview, we want to play for you the speech President Stubb gave at Friends of Europe. The Finnish president spoke freely, openly and candidly about Finland's place in NATO, European defense at large, and how the EU and NATO must work together. On Ukraine, Stubb's message couldn't be clear. Ukraine's place is as a full member of NATO, and progress towards membership is irreversible. Here's Alexander Stubb's speech.
In terms of speeches, in the next few months, I'll be doing a trilogy of speeches. One will be on defense, one on security, and one on foreign policy. And this one today here is basically on defense. I'll be speaking freely, but I have actually written the speech in an airplane, and I wrote it shorthand. You should actually try it. Do you remember what it's like to write? Like, it's actually quite efficient. Took 3 hours. Of course, then the team has, you know, revamped it completely and destroyed it. But, you know, the original version was really good. And I do recommend, you know, I do recommend that you read it, but I will be speaking freely. And the way in which I do it is I'll have an introduction. And then I will have 3 points, one on Finland defense, the second one on NATO and defense, and the third one on the EU and defense. And then I'll make some concluding remarks. But by way of introduction, I think all of us know that defense requires planning. And it's always very long term. But I don't think any of us planned for the Russian attack on Ukraine on the 24th of February, 2022. I think many of us were caught off guard in a harsh kind of a way. We were not prepared. And I think we should be blatantly honest. Was it not for the heroic fight of the Ukrainians, the Ukrainian army, and President Zelensky, we would have been as weak as we were in 2008, the war in Georgia, or 2014, when Putin and Russia annexed the Crimean Peninsula. So in many ways, I think the tipping point of the whole war took place, obviously, in Ukraine, but that also set the agenda for all of us. And our memories sometimes are quite short. You know, this happened 2 years ago, and here we are. I have a set of meetings in Brussels yesterday and today, and all I'm talking about is war in Europe, defense, Finnish defense, the EU's defense, and NATO defense. I was in Kyiv last week on Wednesday, and when I left President Zelensky, we had 3 hours together, 1 hour just tête-à-tête. I told him, that you're going to win this war, aren't you? And he looked at me, I said, Alex, we don't have a choice. But my message to all of you here today is that we have a choice. We have a choice either to help and support Ukraine or then to fall into the oblivion of history and allow Putin to continue his imperial crusade. My thesis today is very simple, and that is to say that defense is never binary, so it's not either or NATO or the EU or national defense. Actually, it's all of the above. So Finland's national defense feeds into the collective defense of our allies in NATO, and both are connected to the defense dimensions of the EU and its overall role. Now, many of you will know me as an EU nerd, but I feel that I'm hard becoming a NATO nerd. And by that, I mean to say that you have to be very careful that you don't put NATO and the EU as some kind of opposites. We have a tendency to do that very quickly. The whole debate on strategic autonomy, strategic sovereignty, on, the EU can't do defense, or, the NATO is not capable. Don't think like that. We have to think about it in a much broader sense. So my first point will be on Finland and defense. And I see a lot of Finnish friends in the audience, so some of it will be a little bit of repetition for you guys. But the bottom line, I think, is very simple, that during the Cold War, we were neutral, but we were not neutral out of free will. We were neutral out of necessity. We simply had to. A lot of times we had to compromise our values. Why? Because we didn't have the luxury to do otherwise. We were living next to an imperialistic and expansionist neighbor. And just for the record, I'm not talking about Sweden or Norway here. So when the Cold War ended, we had a choice. And our first choice was to join the European Union. I'll talk about that in a second. But the political leaders of the time, I think, with the wisdom of hindsight, we're right. We were not ready for NATO membership because we would have had to push it into a referendum. And in 1994, I think it was the 16th of October, if I recall correctly, we voted on EU membership in favor, 57-43, and on NATO it would have been a negative vote. And in order to make sure that we stayed secure, we had to do two things, really. The first one was to build an international defense corporation to make sure that we would be as interoperable as possible, and also to be as compatible to NATO as possible were the day ever to come that we would seek membership. So as a consequence, our military at the time and our politicians did the right decision in purchasing 64 F-18s from the United States. So this made sure that, yes, we're not in NATO, but we're actually depending on American military material. And I think that was a key decision. Along with that was us participating in crisis management operations, for instance, in KFOR in Kosovo or in ISAF in Afghanistan. And we did that because we felt that though we were not a part of the alliance, this would be what our military needed to do. The second focus we had outside of NATO membership was not to fall into the oblivion of sort of idealism and thinking that war has ended and history has ended. Instead, we focused very heavily on our national defense. So this meant, among other things, that we had mandatory conscription. I'll just do a test. How many of you have done the Finnish military service in here? See? You know, they're hidden all amongst you. So be careful. And you know, that kind of leads. I mean, why did we do it? Because for us, foreign policy is existential. You know, we've had over 30 wars or skirmishes with Russia since the 1300s. We always understood that we had to be prepared. I mean, why would we otherwise have 900,000 men and women gone through military service, or 280,000 men and women that we can mobilize at wartime? Why would we otherwise have bought an additional 64 F-35s this time around? Why would we have gone into the secondary military markets in the middle of the Euro crisis to buy military equipment, including tanks and other arms? Why would we otherwise have the biggest artillery in Europe together with Poland? Or why would we otherwise be the only Nordic country with a missile defense system in the air, land, and sea? We did it because we knew that there would always be a potential threat. And let me add, it wasn't easy. Because people see it as a zero-sum game. Welfare state versus military state. So to maintain 2%, which we dipped below, I admit, to maintain it long-term was never an easy feat. So what would be my reading line here? It is to say that at the same time, our defense was never built in a vacuum. So it was always about interoperability and international cooperation, whether with our Nordic and Baltic friends, the US, the EU, or NATO. But the core of it all was our national defense. And this is where I come to my main point on Finland and defense. It is to say that we are currently in the process of changing our mindset from what used to be called, I quote, a credible and independent defense, to, and I quote again, a strong defense as part of the alliance. And this might sound as semantics, but it's not. Because this basically means that my message to our armed forces and military establishment is clear. National defense and international cooperation can and must go hand in hand. It is not either or, it is both. And that will be the approach we take in the coming years as we work on integrating our defense within both NATO and the EU. It's not going to happen overnight, but it will happen. My second point today is then about NATO and defense. Of course, last week we celebrated the one-year anniversary of our membership in the alliance, and of course the alliance itself celebrated its 75th anniversary. And we're very proud to be a member of NATO, and many of you might know that I've been an advocate of Finnish NATO membership most of my adult life. I was a bit wild when I was young, so you'll understand. But the bottom line here is that it might sound that we are new kids on the block, but to be honest, I think we were NATO members all but Article 5 for the past 30 years. Why? Because we made ourselves compatible. Why? Because we participated in NATO operations. Now, we've joined the alliance in the middle of change. I fully admit that, and we understand that. And we also joined an alliance in the middle of transition. And the big thing here is to understand that we have just doubled NATO's border with Russia. And if and when NATO defines Russia as its number one threat, we fully realize that the burden and responsibility that lies on our shoulders is quite big. I might sound a little bit un-Finnish on this, but I would argue because of the size of our military and defense forces and because of our geographic locations, we are a mid-sized state in NATO rather than a small state. That's at least, I guess, how we feel. Now, my bottom line is very simple. We are security providers, not consumers. We give stuff to the alliance. We are there to protect the alliance. We have the numbers, we have the know-how, and we have the capacity to do that. And that is about defending our Baltic friends, and it is about defending our Nordic friends. Now, we do what we say. So our defense forces are optimized for fighting in hard conditions in the north. We have a comprehensive security concept to maintain a resilient society, and we also have an advanced technological base. And we try to bring these in to the alliance. Yes, we're only 1 year old, and the alliance is 75, but we hope that we can give as much help as possible. I also argue that because we come from the geographic margins of Europe, we have to be in the institutional core of the alliance. So our mindset is very similar to the one that we had when we joined the European Union in 1995. We together will be building NATO 3.0. And I know that we're taking the alliance back to its roots as a deterrent against Russia. And as stated in NATO's strategic concept, Russia is the most significant and direct threat to our security. And this should be the focus of everything that we do. And Finland will certainly play its part. Having said all of that, as we approach the NATO summit in Washington in July, it's important that we focus on our main tasks, defense and deterrence. They are and remain the backbone of Article 5, our commitment to collective security. In addition, NATO's deterrence, in my mind, is actually quite straightforward. It is about capability, credibility, and communication. And it is based on an appropriate mix of conventional, missile defense, and nuclear capabilities, complemented, of course, by space and cyber capabilities. This is what we need to build on. This is for all of us, and this is what we will do together. So the posture is defensive, proportionate, and fully in line with our international commitments. And I just had a meeting with Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg and told him that he can count on Finland's strong support as we move towards the NATO summit. And one part of this is, of course, what we do with Ukraine. And having discussed the matter with Zelensky in Ukraine last week, I was very clear. Ukraine's place is as a full member of NATO, and progress towards membership is irreversible. That is the message we need to send to Putin and to Russia. Let me then finish off on my third point before I conclude, which is about EU and defense. Now, you have to understand that Finland joined the European Union for security political reasons. Yeah, we talked about the internal market, we talked about competition, and we talked about trade. But to be honest, at the core of things, it was about our security. And of course, it was a value-based decision. Immediately ditched our neutrality, but we were also very constructive. And I remember being a young civil servant negotiating the Amsterdam Treaty and the Nice Treaty and the Lisbon Treaty. We're always focusing on, let's do something on crisis management, and let's build the defense capabilities of the European Union. Why did we do that? Well, because we understood that we were not members of NATO and we should maximize our security. So the mentality that at least I have personally is that you shouldn't really differentiate between the EU and NATO security providers. They just provide different type of security. And you should really look at them as the same coin, but two different sides. And I actually think it's quite simplistic, a little bit old-fashioned, and sometimes intellectually a little bit lazy to separate the two. I know there's a tendency to do that, especially in Brussels, but also I think in capitals. And a lot of times it's about the identity for the institution that you work with. You know, if you work for NATO, you think that the EU sucks. If you work for the EU, you think that NATO sucks. I mean, it's kind of normal. I mean, it's understandable and quite natural. But I still think that the basic aims of the EU remain the same, the four. So peace, security, stability, and welfare. I just met Ursula von der Leyen. She said in the beginning of her mandate that she wanted a geopolitical commission. She got that, and then some. I actually think that she will go down in history right there with Jacques Delors. And yes, you can say that it was because of circumstance. Well, you have to grab the opportunity. It's not the president that makes the agenda. It's the agenda that makes the president. Who would have believed that it would be the European Union that navigates through COVID? Who would have believed that we're negotiating the 14th sanction package against Russia, or that we're using the peace facility as an instrument basically of financing the war? Who would have believed that we're able to freeze the assets of Russia? Who would have believed that we're able to get together so many rounds of support for Ukraine. Someone needed to do it. Someone needed to coordinate it. And I think the European Union did a great job. Now, some people, including Mark Leonard, says that we live in an age of unpeace. I agree with Mark. The things that were supposed to bring us together, like trade, interdependence, energy, information, technology, can also be used as instruments of war or instruments of power against each other. A lot of people forget that the European Commission has exclusive competence on competition, on trade, and on customs. Those can be used in many ways as tools in today's world. Now, what do I then think that the European Union should do here? I actually think it should use its toolbox as widely as possible. And this doesn't mean that we start having some European armies or troops. But in this war, you have three pillars: national, NATO, and the EU. And the EU, there's plenty to do. I support many of the initiatives taken by President Emmanuel Macron, as well as other leaders and the Commission. We need to begin using the toolbox more actively in the areas such as financing, industrial policy, space, and cyber defenses. The European defense industry is currently fragmented and inefficient, nationally oriented, and resulting in smaller volumes in different variants. So what we need to do is basically combine purchases, offer financing for defense purposes, leverage technology and industrial policy, and build an EU-wide security of supply. All this builds on the EU's broad toolbox. It's practical and it serves the overall strategy of becoming a more capable and responsible actor and a more credible partner for in the rest of the world. So let me then conclude with, well, 3 points. The first is to say that the process of integration of Finland's defense into NATO is well on its way, and we will work to make it happen. Just give us a little bit of time. This means that we will increase our efforts across all domains with our allies in the air, sea, and land, as well as cyber and space. And we will work with allies to set up a NATO presence and structure in the region best suited for defense purposes. And keep in mind that Finland has doubled, again, NATO's land border with Russia. So we are a frontline state, and we will do our part. You will know that we have made a commitment and a wish that we would be under the command of Norfolk, but that is a military decision for Secure to take. Also, we believe that if there needs to be NATO presence on land, Finland is probably the best place suited for that. That is our wish, but the decision is not political, nor is it regional. It should be strictly military. We are also an Arctic country and a Nordic country, and the fact that all Nordic countries are now in NATO brings a new level of cohesion, I would argue, to the defense of the Nordic region. My second point, Finland does not differentiate between NATO and the EU. We understand that the organizations differ and their tasks are different, but they also complement each other in various ways. So strategic autonomy is a worthy goal for Europe, especially if it means that we increase our commitments to defense, but we must be achieved by cooperating with our partners, including the United States. The bilateral relationship between Finland and the US will remain essential. We are European, but at the same time, transatlantic. They are not mutually exclusive, quite the contrary. My final and third point is that we will be a reliable partner in the EU. So it means that we will do our part. We will keep our commitment outlined in Article 3 of the Washington Treaty, which includes exceeding 2% of GDP in defense expenditure. And we do that as much for ourselves as our allies in NATO and our partners in the EU. And my final remarks are these. In the end, this is about driving change of mindset throughout Europe. Defense is not something that only the states bordering Russia should care about. We are all threatened and we are all affected. We must foster a strategic culture mindful of the fact that everything starts with people. We have to ensure that our populations have the will to defend their country and creed. To do that, we must make sure that our countries, our democracies, and our ideals are worth fighting for. And I will leave you with a thought of 80, 90, 90. That is to say that in Finland, 80% of the population is willing to defend the country. That is more than in any other European state, and one of the highest in the world. Secondly, 90% of the population is in favor of NATO membership. And thirdly, 90% of the population is willing to send Finnish soldiers to NATO operations. So worry not, we will do our part. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you for staying on that side and listening to this week's episode of Policy Voices. If you want to comment on today's episode, you can search for Friends of Europe on LinkedIn and X or send us an email. Our address is press@friendsofeurope.org. As always, don't forget to subscribe to Friends of Europe's podcast wherever you get your podcasts to never miss an episode of Policy Voices. I'm Katarina Villanova, and I'll be with you again next week. Until then, goodbye.